I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
A massive earthquake shook southern Turkey and northwestern Syria in the early morning hours on Monday. Homes and businesses collapsed to the ground with people inside. By Tuesday afternoon, more than 7,000 people had died, and the death toll is expected to keep going up. Sarah Dadouche covers the Middle East for The Post.
I mean, it's horrific everywhere. And the images that we're seeing coming out from all over the place are very, very, very scary. But some of the most hit parts in Syria are its most poor and most abandoned area.
The aftershocks of the 7.8 magnitude earthquake vibrated across borders. Sarah says it woke her up in Beirut.
I thought I was dreaming that I was about to die in an earthquake because it was so intense and long. And this is what people kept repeating in their testimonies. It was very long, and that was quite shocking.
From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm your guest host, Kim Bellware. It's Tuesday, February 7th. Today, I talk with Sarah about the devastation the earthquake has left behind in Syria and Turkey, and why the disaster is raising fears of a new humanitarian crisis in the region. Sarah, can you describe the damage for us? What does it look like on the ground right now?
I mean, in Syria, a lot of the damage that the earthquake caused was compounded by the fact that a lot of these buildings have been bombarded for so long, so their structural integrity was no longer, there. It really looks like in some parts of Syria, like whole areas have just been pancaked, flattened down. There are whole neighborhoods that, you know, tens and tens of buildings that were crowded with people that have just completely collapsed onto themselves, like a house of, you know, cards. In Aleppo, in the government-held part of Syria, the buildings are you know, very much husks after the war. A lot of those fell. There are other buildings in other parts of the country under government control that have been in desperate need of some kind of maintenance. Infrastructure in Syria has been really old. So all of that we're seeing completely collapse. In Turkey, the destruction has been very, very massive, more so than in Syria because the epicenter is there. But Turkey also has a history of dealing with earthquakes, so a lot of buildings have been fortified before. But the extent of the damage in Turkey is still obviously very, very staggering. Whole buildings have collapsed, and rescue efforts are just endless. The damage in Turkey actually, alarmingly kind of makes the images that's coming out of it look like Syria, really. There's bent cars and different machinery that's been completely dismantled because of the weight of the concrete buildings on top of them. I mean, you see just people huddling under big coats or blankets, just trying to pick through really big mountains of rubble and human belongings to try to get to their loved ones or get their things. You know, buildings are just gutted and their insides are kind of spilling out into the streets. These are the kinds of images we're seeing come out of Turkey. And this is sometimes, you know, surrounded by snow and very harsh, hard, cold conditions.
What are you hearing about what it was like to go through this?
So I've mainly been covering the northwest of Syria when it comes to this quake right now. Syria and Turkey themselves, their governments have foreign allies that can help them. The northwest of Syria doesn't have that because it's a lawless land mostly. And what I'm hearing is a kind of a desperate cry for help because there isn't enough aid, there isn't enough manpower, there isn't enough heavy machinery, there isn't enough light, there's no electricity or internet, which cut off right after the earthquake. The situation is really, really dire. The government-held parts of Syria and Turkey are also obviously suffering really big numbers and really massive destruction. But they have systems in place that are more or less ready to respond. Syria less so, but Syria also has foreign allies. And there was an outpour of humanitarian aid offered to Syria in the aftermath of the quake. The Northwest does not have that kind of support from outside. So Syria's Northwest has an opposition held enclave. It's mainly in a province called Idlib, but it spills out into other provinces around it. It's run by a government called the Salvation Government. It's a pseudo-state that was kind of born out of a militant group that used to be, rife with extremists and considered itself an Al-Qaeda affiliate. In the last few years, this group has kind of tried to completely rebrand itself. They don't really do much beyond attempt to provide stopgap measures and fight and do occasional battles with the Syrian government. As a result of their presence there, the Syrian government and its Russian allies still bombard the place with air raids. The most recent one was a few weeks ago. So yeah, the government really, the Salvation Government cannot really offer its residents anything, let alone salvation.
What are rescue efforts looking like in Turkey?
So Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced a state of emergency for 3 months in 10 regions hit to give rescuers more time to dig through the rubble of these collapsed buildings. Emergency teams have been dispatched everywhere.
Fevkalade tedbirler almamızı zorunlu hale getirmektedir. Depremin yaşandığı 10 ilimizi.
Syria has done the same, albeit with much more scant resources. There's been technicians and other rescue teams that are being dispatched from other countries in order to train and people on the ground and also relieve them. The rescue effort has kind of been very big. There's a lot of people volunteering from different countries. So that's the kind of the silver lining that we have.
Sarah, tell me more about the geography of the region that was hit. Is this mostly cities? Is this a rural area?
A lot of really big cities and towns were struck. So we're seeing Diyarbakir in Turkey, which is an overwhelmingly Kurdish area. Gaziantep, which was close to the epicenter of the quake. These are all populated areas. The north of Syria is also very populated. There is, 4 million people in the northwest alone. The estimates of the killed are kind of alarming, and there is projections that we may see thousands more deaths.
Yeah. And this is not the only hardship that this region has faced in recent years. I know the civil war in Syria began over a decade ago. What else has been going on in the region other than this earthquake?
Well, Syria has been going through kind of a myriad of crises in the last decade. There's economic ruin all over the country. The government-held parts are also going through this because the government cannot afford to do most things as a result of the war and because of widespread corruption and warlords that have emerged since. The northwest of Syria and different parts of Syria are facing compounded effects just because there's a lack of water. There's been a spread of, there's been cholera that's been spreading around Syria that we saw late last year due to contaminated water and people drinking unclean water. Another issue is climate-related issues. So we saw a lot of fires that have kind of wreaked havoc on Syria's wheat industry, which is a really big industry. Syria used to be a breadbasket in the region, and now it has to import wheat from outside. And this is also a problem that exists across the board for Syria. It now, a country that really did not rely on imports, that used to make everything itself, or almost everything itself, is now having to import at a dollar rate that it cannot afford because there is no money in the country. Right now, on top of the earthquake that's happening, there's really intense rainstorms that are taking place, which made rescue much more difficult. People couldn't hear, rescuers couldn't hear the voices of people, especially in places like Syria, both government-held and the Northwest. There isn't that much capacity and technology to take people out because this is a country that's just been ravaged by war. So people were relying on their ears to find and identify human beings who are stuck under the rubble. And the rain just made that so much harder.
Oh my gosh. Are there any other specific ways that you know, those dynamics are affecting the rescue efforts?
So one rescuer told me how she kept trying to get to a 14 or 15 year old girl who she took out her brother, and she could just hear in this little girl's voice, you know, how badly she just wanted to get out and live. But they couldn't get to her because they simply didn't have machinery. They were using wooden stints to prop up concrete and buildings. Eventually, around midnight, they were able to get some stints from an NGO. But before then, still till now, there are no tools, simply no tools, no medical ability and no tools to deal with this disaster. This is not to mention food, water, shelter that's now been damaged from the earthquake. People were living all over in the northwest province of Idlib. People were living in tents and olive groves on hard earth. And now they have no place to go because the earthquake ruined what little they have.
Sarah, how are the rescue efforts going now?
Rescue efforts are still underway in all different areas. Syria has announced, you know, in more central areas that were further away from the epicenter, that they've finished the rescue and search missions and they've kind of closed those areas down. But there are still massive efforts going underway. Help is flooding to Turkey as well as Syria, but Turkey has been damaged more. The issue now is, I mean, the cold weather poses really big threats of hypothermia and frostbite to those who are still lying under the rubble. The longer it takes, the more difficult it is to extract people, especially with the harsh cold striking southern Turkey and northern Syria. Temperatures in Gaziantep in Turkey and Aleppo, Syria, both of which were, you know, hit hard by the earthquake, are forecast to dip below freezing overnight tonight into tomorrow.
After the break, I ask Sarah about how the international community has responded to the crisis and what challenges aid groups are facing in Syria. We'll be right back.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Stop wasting money on the things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Washington Post. That's rocketmoney.com/Washington Post.
Has there been any international aid sent to the area?
There's been a lot of international aid that kind of relatively quickly dispatched. The Qatari Red Crescent actually said three of its field staff were killed. They already had people on the ground working in northern Syria and northwestern Syria. Doctors Without Borders said that one of its employees was found dead under the rubble of his home in Idlib. But regardless of that, I mean, people, or if anything, it's maybe spurred a lot of people on. There has been calls for donations and volunteers to be sent. The issue with northwest Syria especially is that the border is closed and access is not as easy, and many have to go through different hoops in order to reach the area. And that area is always under constant threat of being cut off from humanitarian aid, which almost 90% of its 4.5 million people need, because of a bi-yearly renewal that's necessary by the United Nations to send humanitarian aid, which Russia always threatens to veto. But in other parts, we're seeing a lot of outpour. I mean, especially government-held Syria has been kind of a pariah in the region and globally. And we've now seen Lebanon pledge to send a team of technicians, Tunisia, Algeria, Oman, China, Russia, and Iran, its traditional allies. But there's just been, you know, a lot of efforts to help both countries from all around the world.
So does this mean that even more Syrians will be displaced?
Yes, this will definitely mean that more Syrians will be displaced. More Syrians have already been displaced in the northwest and in other parts of the country, but especially in the northwest, where many people have been displaced, sometimes, I mean, four or five, six times over already. The northwest is made up of 4.5 million residents. About 3 million of them are not from Idlib. They're from other parts of the country that have already been displaced at least one time into that area. Many of them live in tents and in damaged buildings and now have nowhere to go.
Has the EU made any sort of statement or commitment when it comes to sending aid to either country?
Over like a dozen EU members have so far responded to Turkey's call for help. The European Commission had said, and the EU also said that it's ready to support those affected in Syria through its humanitarian assistance programs, which probably means already existing humanitarian assistance programs. But what is in Syria is not enough. It hasn't been enough before. There were stopgap measures to begin with, which means now there will be further strained.
So looking ahead, what are the next few weeks going to look like for both of these countries?
I think the biggest issues facing these two countries right now is still extracting people from under the rubble. And I think at some point there's going to have to be an unofficial cutoff of an kind of an expectation that most people under the rubble could not be saved. And then what would come after is trying to extract bodies and rebuild. In the immediate, I think what these countries are mainly going to need is just medical assistance, food, any kind of shelter solutions that other countries could offer. Given the level of destruction that we're seeing come out of Turkey and Syria, it's likely going to take quite a while in order to get things not even back to normal, but just up and running. These areas are also, I think, now worried that there's going to be more shocks to come. The many aftershocks that followed made things even worse. So now I think everyone who's been affected is kind of bracing themselves for not relief, but a very hard, difficult time to come.
Sarah, thank you so much for your reporting.
Thanks a lot.
Sarah Dadouche is a Middle East correspondent for The Post. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Jordan Marie Smith. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Lucy Perkins. Thanks also to Sabby Robinson. If you love the show and want to support the work we do, please subscribe to The Washington Post. Go to washingtonpost.com/subscribe. I'm Kim Bellware. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.